Hi friends, welcome to Conversations with Canadians. Now, today I'm going to be doing something just a little bit different. I will post my regular weekly conversation episode tomorrow. But today, there's something that I need to address relating to a particular political ideology that has unfortunately been capturing more and more of our mainstream institution. Look, this episode is going to have a lot of my opinion on what I feel is a particularly important subject matter in our culture. If you'd rather not listen to this, or if these types of monologues make you angry, please feel free to skip this episode. And tomorrow, we'll get back to conversations with interesting Canadians. Okay? Here we go. As many of you may be aware, and there has been quite a bit of information circulating around about the Ontario government's new math curriculum, but not so specific about the curriculum itself, but some of the language and ideology surrounding their approach to high school math. Now, to say what I read in the official documents put out by the Ontario government bothered me would be a bit of an understatement. Now, I'm going to begin this episode by reading the section of the math curriculum that's particularly egregious. The section's titled, "An Equitable Mathematics Curriculum Recognizes That Mathematics Can Be Subjective." Great. Now, I mean, okay, look, the phrase mathematics can be subjective is a debate among different schools of philosophy, right? The Platonist or the Platonist would argue that math, it's not created by humans to essentially understand the world, but it's revealed to them, right? Plato's got this saying, knowledge is remembering. So for them, for example, there's only so many geometric shapes in the world, right? Like we can't go about creating new ones because only so many exist. And these shapes would exist independent of our existence or not. Like if humans were wiped from the face of the earth, geometric shapes, the ones that exist, would still exist, right? Like they wouldn't cease to exist because humans weren't around to talk about them. You know, that's like the general notion that they have, right? In this sense, there's this symmetry between mathematics and reality, and it reveals to us that math is the language of the universe, not human creation. Okay, so on the other side, the non-Platonists, their view would be that mathematics is actually a human construct. And it works so perfectly with nature because we've designed math in order to work that way. And the frameworks we use in mathematics for mathematical proofs are a matter of subjective interpretation. Now, unfortunately for the Ontario government, and for us, you know, the aim of the section in its guidelines for their new curriculum, it's not for students to be aware of the philosophical debate surrounding subjectivity and objectivity of mathematical proofs. But I think it's an example of a pernicious ideology that has captured many of our mainstream institutions. So let me read the section here of the curriculum. And again, the title is "An Equitable Mathematics Curriculum Recognizes That Mathematics Can Be Subjective." This is on the Ontario government's website under their curriculum and resources for math. So, mathematics is often positioned as an objective and pure discipline. However, the content and the context in which it is taught, the mathematicians who are celebrated, and the importance that is placed upon mathematics by society are subjective. Mathematics has been used to normalize racism and marginalization of non-Eurocentric mathematical knowledges, and a decolonial, anti-racist approach to mathematics education makes visible its historical roots and social constructions. The Ontario Grade 9 Mathematics Curriculum emphasizes the need to recognize and challenge systems of power and privilege, both inside and outside the classroom, in order to eliminate systemic barriers and serve students belonging to groups that have been historically disadvantaged and underserved in mathematics education. Wow. So that is quite the word salad of ideological jargon. Look, before I dive into this, like, I want you to know my aim here is not to go into some digression about social justice or wokeness and how it's creeping into our institutions. And to be fair, you know, I think social justice is actually an important part of moving society forward. Even the most conservative worldviews, especially conservatism in the traditional sense, you know, there are direct ties to notions of social justice to be found there. Okay. The reason why I think social justice has become so tainted, like, you know, you hear the word and you're like, oh, social justice, like, not that crap again. You know, like, the reason why you have that sort of reflexive reaction, in my view, is because the ideology that's on full display in the document I just read to you has sort of corrupted and tainted the meaning of social justice, just like it does so many other things. So when most of us hear something like what I just read, it automatically doesn't sit right with us, right? Like, there's something about it that's just wrong. And, you know, ask yourself, is that simply because at face value, we think the idea that something like mathematics can be subjective is absurd? Or, you know, is there something deeper at play here? You know, I would argue that it's something deeper, and that something deeper stems from philosophical debates that were once confined to the halls of university campuses. And these philosophical debates are now spilling into society. Like, we'll see them in our workplaces, on television, and for God's sakes, even in our sporting events. But now they're starting to turn their ugly head in our children's schools. And part of the reason why I want to bring this to people's attention is because I think it's important that we realize and understand how much this is invading our life, and how right here in Ontario, we have a clear-cut example right here in front of us in this new math curriculum. So this philosophical debate that I'm talking about is between postmodernism and, like, the critical studies, like critical race theory, and Enlightenment liberalism. Now, before I go any further, I just want to kind of preface this with a bit of background on me, right? Like I said, my idea is not to digress into some, you know, crazy, like, attack on leftist thinking, even though I do think these philosophies are crazy, right? So up until 2015, I was a member of the Liberal Party of Canada. I was a volunteer. I, you know, worked on campaigns. I helped elect a member of parliament who's a friend of mine to this day. And the reason why I left was because as we approached the election, it was becoming increasingly clear to me that the Liberal Party of Canada had been captured by a postmodern political ideology. That, in my view, in many respects, this ideology actually runs counter to liberalism in its traditional sense. So the values that sort of underpin my political philosophy, right, are things like due process, equality before the law, free speech, equality of opportunity, and individual liberty. You know, this I thought would make me a liberal, and, you know, anything that kind of opposes these values, well, not liberal, right? I'm a believer in Enlightenment values, and I hold high regard for the notion of things like logic and the supremacy of reason. Increasingly, I've been finding it odd that many of my ostensibly liberal friends have begun classifying me as having right-wing views. I mean, I kind of find that perplexing because it's simply not something that jives with my worldview, given my understanding of liberalism, for instance, right? You know, I'm a person who really believes in democracy. I really believe that we need both the right and the left because, you know, as the saying goes, nobody's right all the time, and even a broken clock is right twice a day. So no matter, things change, and I guess, you know, in my opinion, the Liberal Party had begun to move away from the center towards the left. And that would lead me to believe that, okay, so the Conservative Party, which was like the center-right party, would occupy the center because, you know, it supports all the things that I'd mentioned before. Free speech, individual liberty, equality of opportunity, due process, equality before the law, all these things, right? And, you know, when you think the term Conservative Party in the modern age, right? You're thinking, okay, like the old notion of conservatism has essentially been defeated, right? They've been defeated in the culture wars. Like, that's done. Like, no one really subscribes. I mean, not no one, but most people, even in the conservative party, don't subscribe themselves to the sort of conservative worldview from the early and like even mid 20th century. Like, I don't even have to go back further than that, right? So conservatism would essentially be trying to conserve Enlightenment values and the tenets of liberalism, which are so fundamental to Canadian society. But increasingly, I have noticed that many conservative MPs and MPPs alike have been speaking the language of radical ideologues that typically characterize, you know, the extreme leftist thought, like the extreme sort of postmodern lingo and extreme progressive lingo that we see in some tenets of like even the Democratic Party in the US, for example, right? And I don't know if it's because these people themselves, speaking of the Conservative Party here in Canada at federal and provincial levels, if they've been captured by this line of thinking, or if it's because, you know, they think, well, we have this base level of support and we really need to appeal to left of center voters, and this is the best way to do it. So whatever their rationale is, I really have begun to find it a problem that we're running out of reasonable and rational opposition in this country to these ideas, right? Like, we need people pushing back against this so, you know, there can be debates out in the open, and they need to be mainstream by our political leaders. So to put it bluntly, reading this document, I think the Ontario Conservative Party has been captured by ideological propagandists. Because, you know, when you read something like, and I quote, "Mathematics has been used to normalize racism and marginalization of non-Eurocentric mathematical knowledges, and a decolonial anti-racist approach to mathematics education makes visible its historical roots and social construction." Like, you read that, and, you know, what do you think to yourself? Me, the first thing that comes to my mind is, who writes incoherent garbage like this? You know, and when I think about it, the answer is ideologues who apply deconstructionist philosophy to fit the complexities of the world into their narrow worldview, which, you know, if you get into it, it really comes down to one simple thing, and that's power. And you can see this emphasis on deconstructing everything to power in the very next sentence in the government document. So the very next sentence, they say, "The Ontario Grade 9 mathematics curriculum emphasizes the need to recognize and challenge systems of power and privilege." Now, what proponents of this philosophy aim to teach, or rather indoctrinate your children with, is the notion that the world is nothing more than a Hobbesian. And for people who don't understand the reference of Hobbesian, it really means the state of nature is a constant state of war against of all against all. So for them, like, what they want to indoctrinate your children with is this idea that the world is simply a Hobbesian battleground of competing power interests, right? Nothing more, nothing less. Like, that's all that exists, right? And these are often like reductionist explanations. And what I mean by that is, you know, everything in the world is reduced to something like power, for example. And these reductionist explanations are attractive to people, right? Because it provides them with explanatory power. It provides them with understanding of complex systems because it simplifies them. It gives them a simple framework to make sense of the world, right? And as wise people, a lot smarter than myself, have said, because this is where I've learned it, there are no simple explanations of the world, right? And it's a hallmark of ideologues to try and provide simple explanations for complex issues. So you might be sitting there thinking to yourself, geez, Mike, well, what the hell does this have to do with math? And my answer is nothing. You know, it's really likely. And there's nothing in the curriculum that says they're going to start teaching that, like, oh, math is subjective, right? Like, and clearly the idea that we're going to be teaching mathematical proofs are merely social constructs, like, and 2 + 2 can actually equal 5, that's probably a far way off still. At least let's hope so. If not, they better tell us so we can stay off the bridges in the decades to come, right? However, you know, my issue is, the intent by proponents of this philosophy is more so to create activists out of students, to tear down the system, right? Like, math isn't objective. We don't believe in objectivity. We're going to tear that down. And the mere appearance of this sort of language in government documents, this should be enough to cause alarm for any sensible person. So what I want to do here is kind of really briefly look at postmodernism and critical race theory, right? And I'm going to get a lot, I'm not a philosopher, you know, just in case you didn't know that, if anyone didn't know that out there. So if you really want to understand something like postmodernism, there's a great book that I read. It's called Explaining Postmodernism by Stephen Hicks. It really traces the philosophical roots of postmodern philosophy and like shows how it's been used by postmodernists and how it creeps its way into society. Very interesting book. I strongly recommend it. But, you know, at their core, postmodernists, they're skeptical of meta-narratives. And they're skeptical of the idea that large uniting narratives are valid, right? Postmodernism, it pushes the idea that there can be no objectivity, right? Because subjectively, we experience things differently. Now, the one thing you'd notice about postmodernism is there's an inherent contradiction in its line of thinking, right? Because, like I said, postmodernists don't believe in grand narratives, but they would argue everything that is done in the pursuit of power, like either, you know, trying to get more or maintain your position of power, which essentially makes power their meta-narrative, you know? And you may think, well, how stupid of them, that doesn't make much sense. But don't think that logical inconsistency is accidental. The logical fallacy is more of a shot at the very idea of logic itself, right? Like, remember, it's more of like a skepticism, like deconstructionist philosophy. So it wants to take aim at the things that underpin our society, things like logic, for example. So this, you know, is like kind of poking at it, like with its logical fallacy that's inherent to its own philosophy. But for postmodernism, you know, like many things in its original form, it had its merits. Mainly, I think initially it was used as a critique of literature and the idea that our experience with literature is subjective, as in you and I can both read the same book and get a different understanding based on our personal experience. And this, of course, is true, right? The problem is that this postmodern philosophy and the way they've deconstructed literature, they've applied this same mechanism to expand to all areas of life and all disciplines. And hence, this is the problem we find ourselves in today, where the Ontario government is publishing a document claiming that mathematics is not objective, but subjective, right? Think about how this would look like in other areas of life and government. And I'm going to use like the, you know, trivial example here. If there were no moral, objective moral standards, right? Like, should murder be worse than stealing in our legal system? Like, clearly we have a hierarchy of these values, right? What if I value property over life? You know, then what? Like, should stealing be worse than murder in that case? Because subjectively, my property is more important than my life. Why is there a difference between first degree murder and, say, manslaughter? What if I don't think intent matters, only outcome? Is the right to life merely subjective, a right granted by government? Or is the right to life a natural law of the universe, inherent to human beings? So part of the reason, why I think it's so dangerous to deny the validity of large-scale narratives is because, in a sense, it denies validity to the way we organize our psyche. And that's psychologically destabilizing. And the other thing you might ask yourself is, how large of a narrative are the postmodernists skeptical of? Is it logic, mathematics? What about the idea of law in society or the family unit as a centrality of our culture? Again, like I said, I'm not a philosopher and, you know, I've obviously screwed some of this up. I just wanted to kind of provide a brief overview, and check out Stephen Hicks's book Explaining Postmodernism if you want to learn more about it. Now, critical race theory. Critical race theory, it comes out of critical legal theory, which, you know, as Jonathan Kay and I were talking about on the episode of the podcast I did with him, it comes from a well-founded place of activism, right? That aims to highlight historical structural injustices based on race. So when you apply this to law, for instance, right, critical legal studies would get one to consider the systemic injustices behind, say, sentencing laws in the United States for crimes. You know, when you did an analysis of these laws, you found that in the U.S., the sentences were harsher for crack, which was cheaper and predominantly used by blacks and poorer people, and lesser sentences for cocaine, more expensive, predominantly used by wealthier whites. You know, these and other policies like redlining, you know, they obviously occurred. And like, you know, redlining was a policy that prevented blacks from getting mortgages, especially in certain areas, and led to disparity of wealth, like intergenerational wealth. And these policies were obviously racist, right? Like, that is not even a controversial statement. And the problem I have with critical race theory, which is the same thing that Jonathan Kay kind of pointed out in the podcast, is that it moves beyond its original intent and attempts to offer explanatory power for inequities, real or hypothetical, in all aspects of society based on race. It becomes a totalizing view of the world where proponents of the theory, they analyze the world through the critical race theory framework to suggest the idea that differences in outcomes between individuals and groups can be reduced solely to the same systemic racism that we used in the legal example we just talked about. Again, reducing complexities to a singular explanation, like I said earlier, the hallmark of ideologies, right? Okay, at this point, you might be saying to yourself, Mike, this is stupid. Why care about abstract philosophies that have no basis in reality, no application to real life? Well, the reason why this is important is because these are no longer merely philosophical games being played in the ivory tower by intellectual elitists. But right now, you are seeing the impacts of these philosophies played out in the real world, in your workplace, and in your children's schools. A philosopher once said, I don't know which one, I heard this quote, Jordan Peterson referenced it once. He said, "Everyone is the unconscious exponent of a dead philosopher." And he's not the architect of it. Someone else is, but you know, it's very profound because it essentially means, you know, that your words are, and your ideas aren't your own. At like one point, someone else thought them up long before you, and now you're, you know, uttering them in their wake, more or less, right? So you can see both the postmodern and critical race theory philosophies in our math example by looking at the references to racism, anti-racism, colonialism, power and privilege. So these phrases, they're not there by accident. They're part of the worldview of the ideologues who crafted this document. Now, I'm just going to leave aside the ridiculous idea that math is a tool of white supremacy. There are so many different civilizations all over the world that have contributed to mathematics. And, you know, you don't think Asians and other cultures use math for understanding reality, building structures, technologies, and so on. You know, I'm also going to leave aside this condescending notion that somehow non-Europeans have issues learning mathematics. And, you know, to correct for this, we need to structurally correct for it by driving a stake into the heart of the discipline of mathematics itself. Totally ridiculous. You know, you can see the game here. I hope by now, if like I've been clear enough, right? We're going to further this ideological agenda that is deconstruct grand narratives and things like objectivity under the guise of anti-racism and anti-colonialism. Because, you know, what are you if you don't support that agenda? Some pro-colonial racist? Now, I don't suspect that the Ford government understands even a little bit of this or has thought it through at all. But I find it concerning that they've imported this radical ideology and allowed it to influence education policy. I mean, you might expect this from the NDP, possibly the Modern Liberal Party, but these guys? Jesus. I could be wrong, like maybe they do understand it. The way I see it, there are three possibilities. One, they understand it and agree with it. Two, they don't understand it and are therefore incompetent. Three, they understand it, they don't care about the implications, and all they care about is this perceived idea that this is a pathway to greater electoral success. In my view, all three possibilities are inexcusable. Part of the reason why you get angry at this stuff, you know, even if you don't fully understand it, is because, you know, subconsciously it goes against the way you view the world. And that's the point. It's an attack on the philosophical underpinnings of Western culture. And the fact that the conservatives are allowing this through unchecked, it's really not okay. It's time for parents, educators, and citizens alike to stop allowing our institutions to be captured by radical ideologies. You need to stand up to these ideas and don't back down. And if government promotes nonsense like this or lacks the capacity to understand it, they don't deserve to be in office and they need to be removed before more irreputable harm can be done to our society. Guys, coming out of this pandemic, there's lots of work to do to rebuild this country. We have education issues, economic issues, institutional trust issues, national unity issues. We must return to liberalism. Extremes on both sides, left and right, need to be pushed back against as hard as possible. Okay, that's all from me. Thanks for listening to that rant. We'll see you tomorrow for a regular episode of Conversations with Canadians. Take care. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Conversations with Canadians. If you like what you heard, please hit the subscribe button and follow me wherever you listen to your podcast. You can find me on Instagram at @Mike_RyanG, Twitter at @MikeRyanG, or email me at MikeRyanG1@gmail.com. Please feel free to reach out and send me feedback, especially criticism and ways to improve the show. See you next time, and thanks for listening.